Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children.
Today we're talking about toileting. It's a topic that many families navigate behind closed doors without proper guidance and clarity. To help us bring light, understanding, and practical support to this area, we're joined by the wonderful Charmaine Champ. Charmaine is a Queen's Nursing Institute award-winning specialist, with over 30 years of experience supporting children and young people with their toileting, sleep and emotional regulation needs. She's also a mum in a neurodivergent household, so she understands these challenges, both from a professional and a personal perspective. In our conversation, Charmaine explains why toileting can be so complex for our children, what might be happening inside their bodies, and how small steps can lead to real progress. If your child struggles with toileting, we think you're going to find this episode incredibly helpful. Welcome to the podcast, Charmaine.
Thank you very much.
Can you share your journey and talk a little bit about what inspired you to dedicate over 30 years to supporting children and young people, particularly those with learning disabilities?
Yeah, of course. It probably started when I had a school placement. So you remember when you were at sort of school many years ago, I don't think they do it now, but many years ago, you used to have like a work placement. And I worked in a special needs school as for my work placement and absolutely loved it. And I was like, oh, I really like doing this. I'd like to do more of it. And then I decided that I was going to become a nurse, but I wanted to be a learning disability nurse. And when I was doing my different placements, I was working with lots of different people, families, children, all different ages. And just thought, do you know what? That's what I want to specialise in. I just want to help people to get their views across, because so often things were happening to people and they didn't know. Like, I worked with a lot of children where they had really complex cases, so they may be non-speaking, they may have difficulties like getting about physically as well. I wanted to help with like communication side of things, just trying to get their message across. So that's where it all started from. Work placement, you never think that these things would start from there, would you?
Gosh, no. I did mine in a barrister's chambers. Yeah, completely random.
That's what I mean. You never know where these things take you to. Over the years, because then I now live in a neurodivergent household, so I not only have had all my professional experience, but I have personal experience as well.
Could you talk a little bit about your approach?
Yeah, of course. I've been able to gather research that's taken place over the years. There's lots of different research available, as well as like my experience as well, and put it all together within our holistic PMPU approach. So this is all about not just looking at one area. Often you'll hear, I've been to the doctor or I've been to consultant, wherever, and they're just looking at medication, or they're just looking at, you know, it tends to be just looking at medication. And although medication plays a vital role and it does help, it isn't the only way to help our children. So what I do, I've developed the holistic PMPU approach to make sure that we're looking at more than one area, because it's not just about just sitting on the toilet. Equally, it's not just about just having medication. And often I find that toileting progress isn't able to be made when just one approach is looked at. So when our children, if they're just having the medication and we've been in that process for years and years and years, and we just think we are making no progress whatsoever, my child is still having accidents, they're still withholding, you know, they're still only pooing in a nappy, whatever that may be, it won't work. Because like we mentioned before, it may not be given in the right way, but equally, we haven't looked at the other areas. So we tend to look at the pee and the poo approach, the holistic approach, to make sure that we're looking at more than one area to make sure that our children can progress in a way that's going to be right for them.
That sounds like a really good approach.
As a Queen's Nursing Institute award winner, how has your recognition influenced your work and the approach you take in your practice?
Yeah, so I won the award for helping children to be able to access services. So often I was working with children with quite complex needs, and they were getting really dysregulated and overwhelmed when going to the GP, for instance, or when they were going to the hospital, or they needed to have an investigation done or a procedure done. Families found they couldn't access these services, and it then meant that many children weren't able to receive the medical help that they needed. So they couldn't go and see the GP because they become so dysregulated. But it then meant that they weren't having like their health needs looked at. So things were sort of going by. So the work that I did was all around sort of breaking that all down. So I was then able to do social stories around it. I was able to do hospital packs and play packs as well that I was able to develop. So we had a trial hospital that did that, and then worked with some play specialists that were then able to take that on board. And then play specialists have shared a lot of that information in different hospitals that we've worked with. Going forward, it just means that whatever I'm doing, I just really break everything down to make sure that it's all, I call it bite-sized pieces, but it's just, you know, so say for instance, if a family would really like for their child to sit on the toilet, that's what they want to do. But that may not be where we start. We actually might need to break that down in several pieces because actually the child won't even go into the bathroom. So we're breaking it down to steps for them to go in. And then once we've got that, we can then move on. And I do that with every sort of part of the toileting. So recently, a child I was working with was a 15-year-old who hadn't been able to wipe their bottom, and they were able to progress with lots of the other skills, but it was the wiping of the bottom that they were really struggling with. So I was able to put in lots of fun activities that we were doing, lots of different ways of approaching it, and we'd broken it down. And I met with the family recently, and they said, I'll be honest, when we started this, I could not see how what I was doing was ever going to go to actually sitting on the toilet and wiping. Whereas now they're independently going into the toilet, sitting on the toilet, which they couldn't do before. They were avoiding sitting, and they're wiping their own bottom.
Wow.
You know, I can't believe that that actually is possible. When we started, I was just like, this is what we want, but no idea. And it was just lots of making it fun for the child and the family and giving them that ongoing support. And I suppose that's why I do the one-to-ones, but also my groups as well, because it just gives the families that support that they're not on their own and actually we can do it together. But it's just breaking it down. And that sort of comes from with the Queen's Nursing Institute award that I got. That's where it comes from, really, that I just make sure everything I do is broken down to make it easy and understandable.
It must make such a difference. Really good. What are some of the most common challenges the families you work with face?
It varies, but it tends to have some sort of poo connection. Going long periods of time of not passing a poo, or only passing a poo in a certain place or at a certain time, or only passing a poo in a nappy or a pull-up, avoiding the school toilets, that type of thing, like your wee accidents as well in the day or the night. So it's a real mixture. There's a smearing side of things, like with the poo, sometimes with the picker. So picker obviously incorporates all different types of eating inedible objects or things, but it can include poo within that side of things as well.
I think it's a really common issue, isn't it?
Definitely.
We've actually received quite a lot of questions about it because it's definitely an area that parents are struggling with.
There's such mixed information out there as well. So I don't think that helps.
No, not at all. Let's share the questions we've received.
I can do. Do you have any tips for parents with children who are withholding?
Yeah, so when our children are withholding, it's quite a big issue that's happening. It's not just one particular area that we need to look at. But what I always recommend is that we start inside the body first. So often I will see on different groups or different chat rooms and different advice that families have shared, it's all about just sit the child on the toilet, then they won't withhold. Or all you need to do is just, you need to get a chair, a sticker chart or a reward chart. But if a child is withholding poo or wee, there's always a reason. And what we're seeing, the withholding, is their way of saying, this is a bit tricky for me at the moment. I'm not able to do that. And I might need a little bit of help. So that's where we do our almost like detective investigating side of things and look to see what might be making our children withhold. So that's why we always start from the inside first. So we're looking at our children's wee and poo patterns, for instance, or their drinking patterns. That's almost like a window to our inside ch our children's inside body. So that then tells us how often are they weeing? How often are they pooing? How many drinks are they having in a day? What types of drinks are they having? Or like with the poo, what is the type according to the Bristol stool chart? Because these are all, they seem like really small things, but when we join all those dots together or join it all up together, it actually tells us exactly what's happening inside the body. And then we know where to start. So if we just start with sitting on the toilet on these times, it's not going to work because our children may be struggling inside their body with their wees or their poos. They may be struggling with that. And actually, you're just going to get more and more resistance or more upset, or they just may become really dysregulated. Do you know what I mean? And it's just, so we have to start from where our children are, what's happening inside, and then we can move.
I think it's quite a stressful issue for parents too, isn't it? Because it can make you feel quite anxious if they're withholding and it's been a certain number of days, and then you start to worry about what impact that has on their body. It's an area that there isn't much help with, I think. We've certainly been given the advice of sitting them on the toilet a certain time every day and giving Movicol, and that's about it.
But we need to look at the underlying reason why. And then I always find that if we know why it's happening, then it's almost like we come from a different stance. Because if we don't know why, it's almost just sit on the toilet. Why is it so difficult to sit on the toilet? Don't do poos in the nappy, or don't do them in the, don't do it behind the sofa, please, or don't do it in my blanket box. Just please do it on the toilet. It's just the toilet. But it's really hard for our children. And I think if we're coming from a different point, that we can then see that it isn't our children's fault, and it isn't our fault as parents either. It's everybody's doing the best they can in those situations.
Can it be that they're not recognizing the physical signs?
So often our children need to actually feel when their rectum, which is where the poo is stored, is full, and also when their bladder, where the wee is stored, is full. And when they are, those muscles stretch, and that sends a message to the brain that says that they need to go for a poo or they need to go for a wee. But if they are struggling with their wees and poos, those messages don't always get through. And it then means that they may struggle to actually know when they need to go for a poo or when they need to go for a wee. So that's why we always start with knowing what those patterns are, what's going on with those wees and poos. That's why we always come back to that, because there's lots of different reasons why it may happen. But if we don't know, that sort of, some people may even say it's quite basic information. But believe me, the amount of people that I support and the amount of times that professionals don't look at that side, and you can go through lots of different support. I've had families where they've been in this sort of situation for years and years, and they've been to see the GP, they've been to see the paediatrician. Obviously, before that, it was the health visitor. The paediatrician's then referred on to the gastro team or the urology team, you know, and they've waited years to get to this point for them to say, no, there isn't anything else we can do. But actually, there's lots we can do, because everybody thinks that part has already been done. but actually we can look at that. So I always think just start from the beginning, look inside, and then we can move forward.
That's good advice. One of my children would know they had tummy ache, but wouldn't necessarily know if they were hungry, if they needed the toilet. I think we assume maybe as parents, you know when you need the toilet or you know when you're hungry, but for our children, that's not always the case, is it?
No, initially it's about helping our children to be able to recognize those, and then they're able to learn those feelings and sensations.
That's it. Good that they can learn them.
Yes, all our children can do that. It's just that sometimes we just need to do it in a different way. It's not something where you say, right, at this age, our children will be able to do this and this. It's more about they may be able to feel completely comfortable sitting on the toilet at that age, but actually it takes a little bit longer to recognize the signals. Do you know what I mean? It's not, I never say that with regards to toileting, I never look at it as an age thing. It's just something that will happen.
That's good. Do you have any advice for if a child is only having accidents at home and not at school?
When our children are only using the toilet or having accidents at home rather than at school, we need to think about how our children feel about using the toilet at school. If our children don't feel comfortable using the toilet at school, they may hold on until they get home. And then what I often find is that they're holding on for so long, and then all of a sudden they end up having accidents. I spoke to a family earlier today who said that they would come home from school and their child would literally have an accident on the front doorstep as they were going in. So it's more about what's happening in the daytime to have a look at how we can help our children to feel use those toilets.
I know with my son, he likes to take all of his clothes off when he goes for a poo. And he will only use, we've got two toilets in the house, but he'll only use one particular bathroom, which is fine. But I just wondered, is that quite common?
Yeah, it is. Check out with the toilet or the bathroom that they're using whether that particular toilet is lower than the other toilet. Because sometimes what I've found, because there's lots of families that I've supported who that happens with, and they found that the toilet that their child would go to was actually sitting slightly lower, and it then meant that their knees were slightly higher, which then meant they were getting in more of the correct position to pass a poo, and it was then easier on that toilet. So it
Right.
may be something just to think
Yeah, that's
about whether
interesting. I'd
that
not
if it's
that.
something in the actual toilet to help. And when we're thinking about our children not removing their clothing, is thinking about like the sensory side of things there. If it's a little bit tricky to pass a poo sometimes, it can feel quite overwhelming for our children. And actually, to have anything touching the skin or anything else that may add to that overwhelm is almost like I need to remove this because I really need to concentrate on this right now. And having the clothes and anything else, maybe like some families will say, having people nearby and like, don't come in, or I do it myself, or just like pushing people away. It's all part of, I can't take any more information in right now. I need to concentrate on this poo.
That
So
makes so much sense. I've never thought about that before. He also likes to have his iPad as well, which perhaps is like a distraction so that he doesn't feel anxious. I don't know.
yeah, sometimes it's to do that and to relax as well. Sometimes it's sort of get lost within it.
Yeah, good tips. And how much should parents rely on medications such as Movicol?
It's a good question because obviously with medication, we don't really want our children to be taking medication wherever possible. But it's one of the Macrocol medications. So if you could imagine like an umbrella, you have Movicol, Pediatric Plain, Laxido, Cosmocol medications. They're all the same thing. They're a Macrocol medication. So what that is, it's they're all about applying water to the large bowel to help flush through the poos to help them pass. So often I hear that medication's prescribed, but it's not prescribed in the right way, and therefore our children are taking it for years and years with no apparent progress at all. It's just there, it's something that's taken. And then all of a sudden, we just think, why? So it may be that it is prescribed for the right reasons, but maybe it's not been advised to be given in the right way. So this isn't a reflection on any parents, it's not anything that anyone's done, or it's nothing like that. It's just so often the NICE guidelines, which lay exactly what medication should be given and how it should be given, but sometimes they aren't always followed through. Sometimes part of it is given, part of that advice is given, like let's prescribe Movicol, for example, but then they don't tell you how to give it. So
Right.
it's really important to do that. So, and that is something that I help families with within our support group that we have. So we go through looking to see why, then we're looking to see whether they've actually got it prescribed in the right way. And if it isn't, then I support families in saying, right, this is what we need. Is it possible for you to review it next in your surgery to see this is what we're seeing? Can you support us with that? And then just really helping families, like to advocate more, but to help families to be able to get that the right information, because we as parents, we can't really ask for something if we don't know. Consultants and the doctors have had years and years of training and experience to do that. They need to help families to know when to give it.
Yeah,
So, yeah.
definitely. I think you've touched on this, but can you discuss the importance of collaboration between families, schools, and healthcare professionals in providing that comprehensive support for families?
Yeah, so it's all about our schools and our professionals having the right information. So often, if, say, for instance, we're talking about healthcare professionals, things that they need to make a decision, say, for instance, with medication, to make that decision with medication, they need to know certain things. But sometimes, because we're living in a situation day in, day out, we don't see any difference. It's just how they are. So we might not notice or might not think that our children are passing, I don't know, passing big poos, for instance. It may just be that's what our child has always passed. So therefore, we wouldn't think that they were big, because for as long as we can remember, they've always passed a poo like that. So we wouldn't think to maybe say to the healthcare professional, my child passes a big poo. And therefore, without that information, they then can't make that next. So sometimes it's just making sure that we're really open about what it is that we're what's happening, so that they can make those sort of decisions. But it is really important that you have that consistency for our children, especially when we're thinking about our neurodivergent children. They need that consistency wherever they're going. And we can't have school starting something, for instance, but not telling us as parents that they've started it, and then wondering why that's not working. Or our children end up just looking at that's how what happens at school, and we don't do that at home. It then becomes a school thing, and then it makes it really difficult for us to provide that consistency wherever they are. Having that sort of that joined up approach. So that we're, for instance, if we're looking at, say, communication, it'll be good to look at it wherever we are and make sure that everybody's doing that same approach. And I'm not saying that's easy, but yeah, it's not always easy to follow that up. But that's why it's needed, because then our children can make that progress.
Yeah, that makes sense. What changes would you like to see in the world to make it more inclusive for neurodivergent families?
It's a very large question, isn't it? Oh, I think if we just started simple, having more visuals to back up what it is that we're saying and doing or sharing. And they're visuals that we don't necessarily just have to say, we have a child with these needs, therefore we'll put it up. Because actually, it's proven that actually it helps all children. So just having visuals, for example, just having a picture to back up what we're saying means that our children are more likely to understand what's happening because they can see that visually. And also, they haven't got to try and find the words. And so, for it reduces that overwhelm as well. So, I think starting simple would be really good. with the toileting side of things for me. I think to have more information, what it is that our children need to do when they go into the toilet as well. Less assuming that, you're such and such, I mentioned it before, but about age, but you're such and such age, you should know that by now. We could just have, actually, this is a different toilet to the one you usually use, so therefore we'll have some information for you.
Great
So
tips.
yeah, I think breaking down things would be great.
And you've got a very generous gift for our listeners.
So our free gift that we're sharing is our free download. So what to do about poo. So that just highlights a lot of what we've been talking today. So it helps you to look at what's happening inside the body. So we're looking to see what's happening with that poo. How often is our child going for a poo? What do they look like according to the Bristol stool chart? And so much more. It also shares like our step-by-step sort of flow chart to show us where to start if poos are not going where you'd like them to be going, or if they're withholding onto poos, or if there's smearing or anything else that's happening with that, then that's what it's designed for. That's how it can help. So it helps you identify that and then helps you know what to do next with that. And obviously, if you need anything else, then obviously I'm available to help. But it just really helps you give that information of where to start. There is something we can do, and if we know what's happening inside, then we know what that next step will be. And that it sort of details that in there.
That sounds like a really useful resource. Thank you. Thank you ever so much for coming on the podcast today. It's been really interesting to talk to you. Where is the best place for listeners to go to connect with you?
I'm on Facebook and Instagram as the Continence Consultant and Trainer, or you can check us out on our website as well. We've got lots of free downloads, our information, our useful group, and our website is www.clicksteps.consultancy.
Brilliant, thank you. We'll make sure we put links to those in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.